Shalom, everyone. I'm Josiah Jeffrey.
I'm Hosea Jeffrey.
And we're back discussing the Torah portions. This week we're looking at the portion Vayakhel, which goes from Exodus 35:1 to 38:20. On some years, this portion is read along with next portion, which is called Pukudei. So be sure to check the pinned comment to see if you should read both of those portions or just this one this week. We've already read the portion ahead of time, so if you'd like to read it as well, why don't you go ahead and pause the video and do that, and then we'll go ahead and get into discussing.
In Vayakhel, the people of Israel follow Moses' instructions for the tabernacle, generously supplying all the materials and constructing all the components and utensils necessary to complete God's tent among his people.
So this portion begins with God again talking to the people of Israel about Shabbat. This is actually the sixth time in the book of Exodus alone that God has talked to Israel about Shabbat. So just really emphasizing that Shabbat is important for the people of Israel. So most of what Moses says here about Shabbat isn't new. He's reiterating you work for 6 days and then you rest on the seventh day. You don't do any work on Shabbat. And if you do work, then that warrants the death penalty for Israel. The one new command that Moses adds is you shall not kindle a fire in any of your dwellings on the Sabbath day, on Yom HaShabbat. This is actually the only time this command is said, prohibiting fire on Shabbat. And this command specifically prohibits kindling a fire. So technically, if you had a fire already lit, that doesn't mean that you have to put it out on Shabbat. You specifically can't light a fire on Shabbat. That's what's prohibited here.
Even though it doesn't say why you're not supposed to kindle a fire, this is one of the only rules that's explicitly given about Shabbat besides resting and not working. So it shows this is important for Shabbat. Everything we've already said about Shabbat is also very important, but this is part of keeping that day holy.
One outworking of this command that you might not think about very often is how this command could relate to driving cars. Because if you think about it, you put your key in the ignition, which starts the spark plugs to power your combustion engine. So you have igniting and sparking and combustion when you're driving a car. So does that kindle a fire? It very well could be. It very well could be considered that, and so driving a car could be a violation of this Shabbat command.
Now, Isaiah also says something about Shabbat when he says, if you turn back your foot from the Shabbat, from doing your pleasure on my holy day, and call the Shabbat a delight and the holy day of Adonai honorable, if you honor it, not going your own ways, or seeking your own pleasure, or talking idly, then you shall take delight in Adonai. And I will make you ride on the heights of the earth. I will feed you with the heritage of Yaakov your father, for the mouth of Adonai has spoken. So Isaiah is telling the people of Israel, Shabbat is not a day for going your own way. It's not a day for going to do things. It's a day for turning back your foot, holding it back, not traveling is basically implied here.
Or at least not just traveling wherever you want to go.
Right. Not traveling for your own pleasure. And so that concept of is starting a car, kindling a fire, and violating Shabbat, well, getting in that car and going places to do the things you want to do, is that a violation of Shabbat? So that's another reason to think carefully about why are you using that car? Do you really need to be using that car on Shabbat? Because if you don't, then that could very well be going against the spirit of Shabbat. Now, as we've said before, it's lawful to do good on Shabbat. So if it's really necessary to do something with the car, then even if it is kindling a fire and is technically violating Shabbat, there is reason for exception to that.
But overall, the main point is that Shabbat is holy. That's what keeps being repeated almost every single time, is Shabbat is holy, which means you treat the day differently, which means you do different things on Shabbat.
Or rather, you don't do your normal things.
Right, exactly. So when it's Shabbat, think about what you're doing, turn back your foot from doing your own things, and treat Shabbat as a delight and keep it holy. So after Moses finishes talking again to Israel about Shabbat, he then moves on to talk about the tabernacle. We had read in a previous portion that Moses was supposed to take a contribution from the people of Israel to get all the materials needed to build the Mishkan, the tabernacle, and all the rest of the holy place. And so here, Moses is taking up that contribution. He tells them all the different materials that they need, the purple, scarlet, and blue yarn, the gold, the silver, the ram skins, the porpoise skins, the acacia wood, the oil for lighting, the spices, the onyx stones, the setting stones, all the different things. And he also asks for skilled workmen to actually put the things together. But then it says that after Moses told everyone what they needed to bring, a bunch of people started bringing the stuff. Their hearts stirred them and their spirit moved them. So their own spirit was moving them to be generous and give what was needed for the holy place. Both men and women started giving their jewelry to Moses and the workmen to start building the holy place. It's actually interesting. We had read previously that the people had given their gold jewelry to make the golden calf. And then when God was really angry with them, they had all stripped off their remaining jewelry because they were mourning and they were sorry for what they had done. And so now we're seeing they're giving that jewelry for building God's holy things.
Previously, clearly, their hearts had been to make idols. Mm. So that's how they were moved. And that's what they ended up doing.
Right.
And God punished them for that. And the gold that they dedicated to that evil purpose was
ground
destroyed.
Up in water, yeah. And they had to drink it.
Yeah. So they don't have that anymore. But the gifts that they're giving to God, when their heart is moved to serve God and to give for the service of God, the result is something good and beautiful that remains.
Another aspect of it that I saw from this was that all of us have things that we value and esteem and put worth and stock in and that we love. But when we're apart from God, everything that we love and value can be used to lead us into sin, or we can devote that to our own sinful, selfish ends. But when we come to God, when we come to Yeshua, we need to lay it all down. The people of Israel, first, they stripped off all of their jewelry because of their sin. They realized how evil they were, and so they got rid of it. They didn't wear it anymore. And then they gave it to God. And God used it to make something beautiful and holy. So when we come to Yeshua, we need to give up everything, every part of us. Not just the bad stuff that we don't like, the good stuff, the stuff that we like and we think are great. We need to give it all to God, surrender it all, and then God will make you a new person on the other side. He'll take what you are, everything that you give him, and he'll make you a new holy temple of his Holy Spirit.
We've already talked about in several past videos, the heart of man is wicked. But in this case, their hearts are being stirred to give generously. So their hearts are being motivated to do good, not to do evil. Mm. Whereas just like a month or so ago, their hearts were dedicated to evil. Now their hearts are moving to good. So what's the difference between their heart moving them then to make a golden calf and their heart moving them now to give to God's tabernacle?
When they made the golden calf, God punished them for that. They saw the result of their sin and they repented of that. They reformed. They turned away from that sin. Those of them who weren't killed because of their sin. When you see the consequences of your sin and you pay attention to God's commands and you follow God and believe in him and believe in his power, then you'll be able to serve him.
When you just let your spirit go in your own way, you're going to go off into evil because your heart is wicked. But when you dedicate yourself to God's word, when God says this is the right way and you devote your heart to that, then you'll move in that direction. You'll move to the good. Mm. You'll give generously. You'll do whatever God says is the right thing to do.
So the narrative then continues saying that both men and women are collecting all their stuff. They're spinning thread. They presented it all as a free will offering to Adonai. And then it says that God specifically called certain workmen to build the tabernacle. God had actually said that he was going to do this in previous portions. But here in verse 30, he goes ahead and says again, "See, Adonai has called by name Bezalel, the son of Uri, the son of Hur, of the tribe of Judah. And he has filled him with the Spirit of God, the Ruach Elohim, in wisdom, in understanding, and in knowledge, and in all craftsmanship. And then it goes on to say that he's also picked another guy named Oholiab and a bunch of other skilled workmen, and he's giving them skill, wisdom, knowledge, and all craftsmanship to build everything that's in the holy place. So I found this really interesting because God has already given the commands for how to build this. He's given the instructions, and yet he's also saying they need my spirit in order to follow these instructions. God didn't just give them his spirit, and he didn't just give them the commands. He gave them the commands and then said, here's my spirit to enable you to follow these commands.
It says he specifically called these two guys by name, Bezalel and Oholiab. Mm-hmm. But on top of that, he mentions that there will be other craftsmen. Mm. And he says that as for Bezalel and Oholiab, he's inspired them to teach. So it's not just that he's giving these guys the spirit so that they can build. He's also empowering them to teach others how to build. Mm. There are going to be lots of craftsmen. These two guys can't do it by themselves. But God has specifically chosen these two guys to have the spirit to know exactly how it needs to be done.
Right.
And to teach the other people so they can do it properly according to the plan. Everybody has access to the plan, but
the specific details, the how exactly everything is supposed to look and work.
Yeah, we have the rules, but how do we execute them? And these guys have been given the specific ability to teach others how to execute this plan of God.
These craftsmen were given God's spirit and were given understanding and wisdom to apply God's commands in practicality. There are set rules, and they have to obey those set rules. But within those rules, there's room for interpretation.
The commands themselves are somewhat ambiguous in certain areas, but there's only one right way to do it. So how are these people going to know the one right way to do it in all those details that this happens to miss in the letters of the instruction? They need God's spirit to do it.
And the same is true for us. We need God's spirit to help us to walk according to God's commands. Yeshua said that God would send the spirit to remind us of all the things that Yeshua had taught us. And also, he'll help us to live righteous lives. If we walk in the spirit, then we won't walk according to the flesh. We'll be righteous instead of being wicked. And it also reminds me of something that God would prophesy through Ezekiel. In Ezekiel 36 and 37, God says, "Moreover, I will give you, Israel, a new heart and put a new spirit within you. And I will remove the heart of stone from your flesh and give you a heart of flesh. I will put my spirit, my ruach, within you and cause you to walk in my statutes. And you will be careful to observe my ordinances. My servant David will be king over them, and they will all have one shepherd, that they may walk in my ordinances and keep my statutes and observe them. I will make a covenant of peace with them. It will be an everlasting covenant with them. And I will place them and multiply them, and I will set my sanctuary in their midst forever. My dwelling place will be with them, and I will be their God, and they will be my people." So in this whole section of Ezekiel, God is directly tying giving his spirit to the people of Israel with them keeping his commands. And he also ties that with sending his servant David, so the Davidic king, the Messiah, sending his Messiah over Israel and establishing an everlasting covenant with Israel. Again, paralleling Jeremiah 31, which talks about the new covenant that he would make with the house of Israel and the house of Judah. So God is saying that one of the key aspects of the new covenant, the everlasting messianic covenant with the people of Israel, is that he would give his spirit in our hearts so that we will walk according to his statutes. Paul will later say that the letter kills, but the spirit makes alive. God has given us his commands and he's told us to follow them. But apart from God's spirit, it's very difficult to follow God's commands, if not impossible. That's why we needed the new covenant, is because God said Israel broke the covenant that God made with Israel at Sinai. And so God needed to write the Spirit on their hearts. The way that God writes his commands, his Torah, on our hearts is through his Spirit. He himself lives in us, and he'll be with us forever. His dwelling place, his Mishkan, will also be with us, and he will be our God, and we will be his people. That is how we can live up to our calling as God's people, and God can truly dwell with us, like he's dwelling in this Mishkan, this dwelling place, this tabernacle. He will dwell with us when he lives in us with his Spirit. And when he does that, we can follow God's commands, not in the letter, which will kill us because we can't live up to those commands. If we follow those in his Spirit, then we will live and God will dwell with us.
That Ezekiel verse you read, it said he would put his Spirit in them and he would remove their heart of stone and give them a heart of flesh. It's just like I was saying a little bit ago, how their heart was being moved in a completely different direction. It says their heart was stirring them to give to these things. It also says, in every craftsman whose mind Adonai had put skill, everyone's heart stirred him up to come to do the work. When God puts a Spirit in us, it changes our hearts such that our hearts desire his commands and such that we can do his commands by his Spirit.
Absolutely.
And as you said, it's in that new covenant that he writes the Torah on our hearts. He puts his word in our hearts through this new covenant, through his Spirit. So as these craftsmen that God has chosen begin to do the work, they collect from what the people of Israel are contributing to get the materials they need. And it actually says that as they began to build, the people of Israel kept bringing more gifts every morning. There were more and more. I have an offering. And it got to the point where the craftsmen had to come to Moses and they say, look, the people of Israel have given us way more than we need.
And it's still coming.
Yeah, they're still giving and we have plenty to do what God commanded us to do. So Moses actually has to give command for them to stop.
His command is stop being generous now. So this is like one of the few times so far that you see the people of Israel and they aren't being complaining or idolatrous or anything weird like that. They are being super generous to giving to God's cause.
The people of Israel don't normally behave this way, but now that they're giving hard.
Right.
It seems like whatever Israel does, they do it hard. And it's been that way ever since Jacob.
Right.
And now they're showing, when we decide we're going to worship idols, we do it hard. When we're going to complain, we complain hard. But when we want to serve God, we serve him hard. And I think part of the reason behind that is because they know what the reward of that would be. They were just told a little while ago, as a result of their sin, God wasn't going to dwell with them anymore. Now, because of Moses' intercession, they've been given a second chance. And they realized when God said, no, I'm not going to dwell with you, they mourned. They realized what a bad thing they had done. And they realized how much they wanted that. They wanted God's presence. And so now that they know they have an opportunity to make the house for God to dwell with them, they really want that to happen. And they're willing to work. They're willing to give to bring that about.
I found this really cool because it's demonstrating how generous the people of Israel are being. And I think that that's a great example for all of us to follow. When we give, we should give until we're told to stop. That when there's a need, we should fill it. And as long as we have the means to fill that need, we should keep filling that need. Now, on the flip side, when they had enough materials, Moses said, all right, it's time to stop giving. Technically, he could have just let them keep giving and it would have built up a surplus and they would have had that surplus. But Moses did not do that. He said, keep what you have now because we have what we need. And so I think that's a good example on the other side for people who are ministering, who are serving God in ministry. When you take donations and such, you should be using those donations to serve God and do God's work. You shouldn't just be taking the donations from people, taking advantage of their generosity to serve your own ends, to build up treasures for yourself and feed your own greed or anything like that. People should be generous, and then the people that they're donating to should use those donations for God and not for themselves.
Yeah, that's a really good point. Just because you're serving God doesn't mean you deserve the money because you're a servant of God. The money should be to serve God. You should be using it. And if you're not using it, you're not entitled to it. Being a servant of God doesn't give you any special status, which entitles you to
everyone else's
money.
Stuff.
No, it's ask people to give to serve God, to complete the need. When you see a way, this is how we can serve God, but I need the resources to do it, you can ask for the resources. So it's not being ashamed to ask, but also it's...
Don't take advantage of people.
Right. Only take what you need to serve God.
So the entire rest of this portion is all about how Bezalel and the rest of the craftsmen put together the sanctuary and the tabernacle and all those things. It's all almost identical to previous descriptions that God had given to Moses on Mount Sinai before the golden calf. And so it just goes through everything. The tent, the menorah, the table of showbread, the bronze altar, and of course the Ark of the Covenant in the Holy of Holies.
One thing I specifically noticed when they were building the tabernacle is that it says they made a bunch of curtains, and it says that they linked them all together with a bunch of different clasps and whatnot. And it says, so the tabernacle was a single whole. It says that about the curtains of the tabernacle, and then it also says it about the tent made from the curtains of goat's hair. All of it. It says it was coupled together that it might be a single whole. Mishkan Echad. One tent. And so this reminded me of us as believers. We're built up as living stones in a spiritual house. And it says that we, the many, are one body in Messiah. We're not all the same. And there are a bunch of us. Mm. But all of us are linked together so that we can be one. And we're made to be one so that God can dwell in us. Mm. So we can be a house for him. And we don't all have the same function. Some of these are curtains for the walls. Some of them are for the roof. Mm. Some of them are just little teeny tiny clasps.
Right.
Things you wouldn't even really notice.
And some are gold and some are silver. Some are bronze.
On the one hand, you have the teeny tiny gold clasps. And on the other hand, you have the huge goat skins. Everyone has their different features, their different strengths. Mm. There are different ways in which God can use them. And that not only applies to the tabernacle itself, we also see it in this portion with the people building the tabernacle. We have Moses was the one who received the command, and he's kind of overseeing the thing. We have the builders, who God specifically gave his spirit to them to give them wisdom and knowledge and skill, some of them to teach others. And for the people of Israel who weren't called to build, they were called to give.
And even they did some building. The women were spinning the yarn to make all the curtains.
Yeah. This was a whole communal thing. Everybody did a part, and everyone did it as one. And they did it so God could dwell among them. So also with us, in Messiah, our head, we are one body. And we all have different functions, but we all serve as his house, his temple. He dwells in us, and we exist for his service. And we all serve in different ways, but we're meant to serve as one. Not every job has to be flashy. Mm-hmm. Not every job has to be big. But everyone has a job, and we all have to do it.
And when everyone's doing their job, the final result is something beautiful and holy. It's something that God can live in and God can use.
So I think the big takeaway from all of this is be moved to do the work of God. God has given us his rules, and we should aim to follow them. But we should also seek to be moved by his spirit. We don't all have the same function. We all have one set of rules, the scriptures, but we all have our own unique functions as to how we can serve God and to how we can enact those rules and apply them in our lives. And so we should seek to be moved to be generous and to do the work in any way that God is calling us to do. And when we do that, we should seek to be doing it as one with others. In our own unique way, contributing to the needs of the whole and to the work of God to accomplish God's will.
That wraps up the portion of Vayakhel. Next video, we'll be looking at the portion of Pukudei, so be sure to tune in for that. Thanks so much for watching. Be sure to like, share, comment, subscribe, and hit the notification bell to keep updated on new episodes. And if you would, please consider sending us a donation to help us make more videos like these. We would really appreciate it. Thanks again for watching, and we'll see you next time. God bless.